all the fights against corruption, nepotism, and the like. That makes sense intuitively. The return for pound or dollar spent is much higher in education to improve the skills of people, and is much higher in adoption of new technologies.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. In a meritocracy, more people can do the jobs that match their skills. Well, that's good for them, and we guess that that's going to be good for the economy as well. So does that imply that in high-income countries, labour markets are more meritocratic? And how are the mechanisms that undermine this meritocracy reflected in the income differences between countries? And in the process of economic development as well. Oriana Baniera of the London School of Economics and Ilse Lindenlaub of Yale are two of the authors of new research that unpacks what we mean by meritocracy and suggests how we might be able to create more of it. They join me now. Ilse, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Thank you, Tim.
Oriana, welcome back.
Thank you.
Ilse, first of all, in today's labour market, there's lots of different types of jobs and there's lots of different types of employers. What does this mean that meritocracy means in practice?
So we think of a meritocratic labor market as one in which workers are allocated to jobs based on merit that is associated with their skills, rather than based on other idiosyncratic attributes that workers might have, like social status, social networks, or wealth, that might help workers obtain certain positions but are unrelated to skills or productivity. In more formal terms, we think of a meritocratic labor market as one in which matches form such that their output is maximized.
If I'm an employer, I want to get the best possible person for the job. And if I'm looking for a job, I want to get the best possible job I can. What prevents job matching from being meritocratic? What mechanisms are there that get in the way?
So we think of three potential mechanisms that may prevent the matching from being meritocratic. A first one that may lead to non-meritocratic labor markets are country-specific matching frictions. We think of these frictions in broad terms. They may include informal institutions, such as the tolerance of nepotism or corruption, whereby social networks or wealth may be more important for obtaining a certain position in the labor market than individual skills. But these frictions may also include and reflect formal institutions, such as the lack of enforcement of anti-discrimination laws, which may lead to preference-based hiring rather than skill-based hiring. Mm-hmm. What is interesting is that in an imperfect world, a world where there are a certain amount of frictions that distorts the worker job allocation away from the best one, which, as I said, is the output maximizing one, also two other factors shape the worker job matching and thus the extent of meritocracy in a labor market. Those we call technology and endowments. So a country with technology that rewards skill-based matching more, or a country that has a tighter fit between skill demand and skill supply in terms of endowments, leads to a situation in which there is more incentives to sort based on skills, and hence an increase in meritocracy would result.
What you're explaining there gives me a clue as to why there might be differences in meritocracy between countries, because I can think of some firms being more meritocratic than others, and some sectors maybe having the reputation of being more meritocratic than others. But you're interested in country differences, aren't you?
Absolutely. What we're thinking about is the allocation of workers in the economy as a whole. If there were only differences between employers or sectors within countries, the labor demand would look the same in all countries. We would find that the degree of worker job mismatch would be the same in all countries. In contrast, we find that the degree of mismatch is actually higher in lower income countries. So that makes us think that there has to be something country specific about it.
Okay, let's have a look at that research then. So to measure the degree of meritocracy in each country, you need to know about the skills of individual workers within those countries, and you need to know about the skills required by the jobs that those workers are doing. Who has this data?
So that's where it gets exciting, you know, where a paper starts. But the existence, we found out a data set from the OECD. Mm-hmm. Everybody's familiar with the PISA data,
yeah,
which measures skills of teenagers, 15-year-olds. But the OECD has a parallel data collection exercise that uses quantitative tests to measure skills of adults. And so we have skills both in numeracy and literacy, which are the main competency that we can think of. And then there is also an ongoing project with always the same OECD group that will also collect data on soft skills. We don't have that yet. That's the next edition. But the key thing is that this data comes from quantitative tests. So it's not self-reported and it's not dependent on the quality of the education in the country. So when we use, you know, years of education as a measure of skills, that puts together the quality and the quantity. So 10 years of education in the UK are not the same as 10 years of education in Finland or in Ecuador.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas our measure of skills is an objective test-based measure, which therefore does not have to rely on the education system being the same. And indeed, if you correlate our measure of skills, 2 years of education, the correlation is much higher for rich countries than it is in lower income countries.
And when you're doing this, are you looking at the quality of new matches, people getting jobs, or are you investigating the quality of jobs that people already have?
Both. Mm-hmm. So it is any existing match that we look at.
So what you've already said about this, in high-income countries, you find that labour markets are consistently more meritocratic than low-income countries?
So we obviously can only do an aggregate measure,
yeah,
because meritocracy is defined at the country level. So consistently, yes. Hmm. As consistent as it can be when you have, you know, 28 countries.
Now, you talked about those three mechanisms which prevent low-income countries from being more meritocratic. Can you identify which of the candidate mechanisms are contributing to this?
Yes, we're going to do an investigation into precisely this question. Let me first maybe remind you of these three mechanisms that we're considering and then go into the findings. So our three candidate mechanisms was differences in matching frictions across countries, whereby some countries, we've talked about that, may face higher frictions that distort the worker job allocation away from the skill-based one that is based on merit.
Yeah.
The second candidate was technology differences across countries, whereby some countries, technology that combines worker and job inputs may reward a tight match between the two more than in others, again, incentivizing workers and jobs for more skill-based matching. And the third mechanism was differences in skill and skill endowments across countries, whereby some countries may not only have more skilled workforce and more demanding jobs, but also better fit between the two, increasing the feasibility of a tight matching between skills and skill demands.
Mm-hmm.
These are our three candidate mechanisms. And the way we go about establishing which one matters the most is mostly through an accounting exercise that works through the lens of our estimated economic model. What is this accounting exercise? You can think of it as a decomposition exercise. It tries to get an answer to the question, which factor of the three, which mechanism is most important, say, to account for differences in aggregate income between, say, our poorest country in the sample, which is Ecuador, and our richest country in the sample, which is Norway.
Uh-huh.
And our main finding from this exercise is that boosting meritocracy in low-income countries mostly by reducing frictions is not going to be as effective as giving them access to better technology and more aligned endowments. And I guess we're going to go into the conclusions of this in much more detail.
Yeah, and quite surprising conclusions they are as well. So the low income of a low income country, surely that might be a cause of low meritocracy as well as an effect of that. But we want to establish the causal relationship from meritocracy to macro outcomes. How can you do that?
So causal relationship is tricky in our context. We don't have the data to establish a causal link empirically. But here's where our development accounting exercise again comes to our help, where we can at least say which of these factors are more important, and we can give a suggestive answer to your question. The interpretation of what I mentioned last, which is that improving frictions or reducing frictions alone doesn't affect poor countries' income in the international comparison as much as improving their technology and endowments, leads us to the following interpretation. We think that higher matching frictions and the associated low-level labor market meritocracy in poorer countries is not the main culprit of why these countries are poorer. Instead, their lower income may reflect lower technological adoption and lack of a good fit between skill supply and skill demand, both of which curtail the incentives to sort in the labor market and hence lead to less meritocracy. So in that sense, we suggest that the lack of meritocracy is not really the source of the lower income in these poor countries, but rather maybe a consequence of not adopting the right technology or the most advanced technology and lacking the appropriate endowments.
And do you get a counterfactual as well? Can we estimate that if these labor markets were more meritocratic, what the boost to output could be?
Yeah, so we can indeed use our model to get an insight into the question of how much output is lost due to low levels of labor market meritocracy. There's a positive relationship in our estimated model between meritocracy, or the tight matching between worker skills and job skill demands and economic developments. A country like Norway would gain around 20% of output if its labor market was perfectly meritocratic, which is considerably less than the gains that Ecuador would get if they were to implement the perfectly meritocratic labor market. The gains of Ecuador would be 4 times as much as the gains of Norway.
Wow. Well, we would want, if possible, these markets to be perfectly meritocratic, but what does that mean for policy? What would be the effective policies that we could implement to improve output through meritocracy in low-income countries like Ecuador, and which policies aren't really going to move the needle that perhaps we might be paying too much attention to?
For the first time in my life, I'm really proud of doing accounting. Because we put a lot of emphasis on causality, and rightly so, but the accounting exercise really tells us how strong these channels are. It doesn't tell us which way they go, but it tells us how strong they are. So all the emphasis that's been put on trying to make institutions more alike, the institutions in high-income countries, all the fights against corruption, nepotism, and the like, which can improve the allocation of jobs in low-income countries, can only give us a multiple of the GDP of that country. So 4 times the GDP sounds like a lot, but given the huge differences that there are between poor and rich countries, it doesn't close much of the gap. So although it does make sense intuitively, probably the return for pound or dollar spent is much higher in education, or to improve the skills of people, and is much higher in adoption of new technologies.
So the idea is that we have a better supply of better educated workers, and when they get jobs, it really matters that they are better educated and better trained, because they can make a difference with better technologies.
Exactly. And then the matching does make a big difference. But when we're using low levels of technology with low levels of skills, it doesn't matter that much how you match.
Ariane, what difference do you think, when you have the data on soft skills, what difference might that make to the conclusions we're drawing here?
I think, you know, the strength of the paper and one of the innovative aspects of the paper is that we look at 2 skills. Normally, in economics, we think about the world being ranked on 1 skill, which we call talent. So we improve going 1 to 2. Having soft skills would allow us to improve on this measure so that we can see whether differences in wages are driven by the differences in soft skills. Because here everything is identified, you see, from looking at people with the same exact skills, doing jobs with the same exact skill requirement, but being paid different wages. So we will be able, once we have the soft skills, to make that comparison even more precise.
So I think it would be also from a descriptive point of view, just interesting to understand whether high-income countries have workers that are more skilled in these social and soft skills or less skilled. I think we don't have an account for that. We all have conjectures and hypotheses about how cognitive skills correlate probably with development, but that's not true for this completely different skill dimension. And so I think it would be worthwhile to take that on board.
The idea of voluntary migration is very often to get a better match for your skills in a job where you can earn more. Now, I know you've done this on a country-by-country basis, but can you tell me anything about the impact of migration on meritocracy and therefore on output to the countries where the migrants are?
Yeah, so one of the nice exercises that we can run in this framework is a counterfactual. So that means a hypothetical exercise where we impose open borders. Mm-hmm. Just to give you one number, if we eliminate all the borders of our countries in the sample and we just let every worker from any country take a job in any country that he or she wants, we would get a worldwide output gain of 11%.
Wow.
So this is a big number. And it's important to say that this effect comes only through a better matching of workers and jobs, and hence an improvement in now the worldwide labor market's meritocracy. This is to say that the high-skilled workers of low-income countries, such as Ecuador and Mexico, would now be able to get fully and highly demanding jobs in high-income countries that fully utilize their skills, something that they were prevented from when they were sort of stuck in their national labor markets.
These are extraordinary results, huge numbers. Thank you very much for talking about them. Thank you, Ilse.
Thank you.
And Oriana, thank you as well.
Thank you.
The paper's called Meritocracy Across Countries. The authors are Oriana Bandiera, Ananya Kochia, Ilse Lindenlaub, Christian Moser, and Andrea Pratt. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode, well, subscribe. You find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you like Vox Dev Talks, we certainly hope you do, then please remember to rate and review us. Tell other people about Vox Dev Talks as well. And then more people can listen to episodes like this.